Disc 1.
Okay, so without any further ado, I don't know what else to say except here's my dear friend Dave Hawkins, my teacher. Thank God he's here.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
What a delightful day, delightful city, delightful music, delightful audience, delightful subject, delightful host. I haven't got much to complain about this morning. We even got some sweet and lows. We needed some sweet and lows, and the restaurant gave us a stack of them. Also, Pepsi, coffee, cigarettes. So you can see that I'm a health freak. You can survive all this, you can survive anything. Well, I gave up all my bad addictions, and I just kept the good ones. Well, we wanted to talk today about aspects of self-healing. Of course, we belong to several organizations here. How many friends of Bill Wilson are here? Oh, wow. Oh, that's wonderful. So, we have several organizations all at the same time. And that makes a wonderful opportunity to speak from many different directions simultaneously. How many here have seen kinesiology demonstrated? Everybody? No, most of you are not familiar with it. All right.
Well, we wanted to demonstrate today the effectiveness of the Course in Miracles, which can be demonstrated scientifically as well as experientially and by observation of the effects of the Course on other people. And one scientific method which I studied was kinesiology. Kinesiology is very neat because you can test things, test the effect of things instantly, right on the spot, tell what the effect is on yourself and on your level of consciousness. And it was an experiment we did in Sedona. We started Course in Miracles there about 1980, somewhere around there, 1980. And what we did was we tested, we had 125 people in the classes, and what we did is we tested everyone in the class before they started the Course in Miracles, and then we retested them again when they got to about less than 90. And we're able to demonstrate a very powerful effect using a scientific method that there was indeed a profound change in the level of consciousness, a change in one's susceptibility to negative, supposedly negative things in your environment. These are all supposedly negative things in your environment. And to the average person who hasn't taken the Course in Miracles, frankly, I would advise against all of them. There's nothing on this podium I would advise anybody who hasn't taken the Course to indulge in. However, after you've taken the Course in Miracles, all these things will now have a totally different effect, in that they will have no effect. To the average person, these have an effect, because there's heavily associated belief systems that go with it. All these things are heavily advertised in the health people. I make numerous proclamations about the effect of all these things on our health. So today we're going to demonstrate that that is not so, that what has the effect on your health is what you're holding in mind. And you'll remember the lesson in the Course, which says that we're subject only to what we hold in mind and to nothing else. So the effect of these things on the podium then depends on what we're holding in mind about them and not on the things themselves. These things in themselves are inert. They're nothing. They're nothing at all. But what I think about them will have a profound effect on what their effect will be on my body. So today we're going to demonstrate that. And we'll demonstrate it in a way that I think you'll find interesting and sort of fun. And that's why I brought all these sweet and lows, which we'll pass out. I first discovered this phenomena on Long Island when a friend of mine, I was to give a lecture to a miracles class that night on kinesiology, and we needed a subject. So I was in the miracles office. We have an attitudinal healing center at the clinic in Long Island. It was started by the Long Island Miracles Group. And I needed a subject, a naive subject, to demonstrate the effect, supposed negative effect of these items. And there were a bunch of Miracles people hanging out in the office, so I grabbed one of them. I said, come on over here a second. I want to test you with kinesiology. Maybe I can use you tonight. When I tested the person, he didn't go weak. So I grabbed the next person in the office, and I said, here, let me try you. And so I tried the next person, and again, the person did not go weak under the influence of the supposed negative substance. I ran through everybody in the office. Nobody went weak on any of these substances. Then a friend of mine who had just started the Course in Miracles was up to about less than 65 or 70. And he wandered in, a good friend of mine who lives with me in Sedona, Randy. So I said, Randy, come over here a second. So I tested him with kinesiology, and using something like Sweet and Low, he instantly went weak. Ah, now at least I had a subject for tonight. But by the time the lecture came around, it was about 10 days later. And then he was now up to about less than 85 or 90, I guess it was. So I grabbed Randy to use him as the demonstration subject. He was now powerfully strong. Couldn't use him as a subject either. So something had happened due to the taking the Course in Miracles, somewhere between less than 70, 75, 80, around in there. I've never wanted to just specify the exact lesson, but somewhere in that general range, something happens to our level of consciousness that makes us immune to the things that affect ordinary people. Somewhere around less than 80, 75. Around in there is the lesson that you're only subject to what you hold in mind. It would seem after all the years on the planet when you believed the opposite, to spend one day on that lesson should have such a profound effect. Seems almost unreasonable. So I've always assumed it's due to the progression, starting from lesson one and going all the way to lesson 85 or so, has a profound effect. In other words, I doubt just picking out the one critical lesson and working on that would have the same effect. There's something about the fact that we chose this course, that we were led to this course. There must be a certain readiness that saw to it that this course came into our life. So that would be the first thing. And then we went through lesson one up to whatever lesson it is where that critical change takes place. So today I want to demonstrate just plain ordinary kinesiology to familiarize you with the technique itself. Kinesiology, right. I won't even tell you what it means. I'll just show it to you. Who would like to be a subject this morning? A naive subject who doesn't know anything about kinesiology. Volunteer? Good. Come on up. You're it. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Good. Now, let's see. I need Sweet and Low just to play with this morning. Good. Now, kinesiology is testing for muscle strength. What we usually use is just a deltoid muscle by having the person hold their arm out to the side. However, the effect that you see is affecting all the muscles of the body. The entire body is going to be affected the way the deltoid muscle is. We can't test all the muscles at one time, so we'll just use the deltoid muscle to demonstrate. All right, so what I want you to do is hold your arm out like this, this arm. All right, when I press down, you resist.
All right.
All right. Good. All right, now hold this in your right hand. Hold that against your stomach. Okay, let go. Now resist.
Oh, you little brat.
Well, I think we'll do it this way so that people can see better. Yeah, this is the stuff people put in their mouth all day, you see.
But I'm at lesson 161.
Ah. All right, now you resist. Okay. Now put this in your hand. Hold it here. Now resist.
I almost did. That's interesting.
Now I will show you something.
All right.
You go like this in front of it.
Wait.
Put this in your hand.
Yeah, and make and a circle? Yeah. And do what, lick it?
Yeah.
Lick
no,
this?
No, just make a circle over it. Counterclockwise. Okay. Now put that back in here. Right there. With the other hand. Okay, now I resist.
Oh,
you're strong. Oh, wonderful. Okay. As soon as you blessed it, you went strong, right?
That's very interesting.
All right.
Is that it?
Yes, that's all. We just want to demonstrate the technique. Then we're going to have the whole class do it. The main thing I want to demonstrate with kinesiology is not so much the effect of physical things in our environment, but the effect of thoughts that we may have. And so here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to divide us up into ones and twos. It can be one, two, like that. And we'll test each other using this same technique. You just hold up one arm. The first thing I want you to do is to test each other just using two fingers. You're not trying to overpower the person. You want to feel how much strength they have. How much pressure does it take with two fingers? So that you get a feeling of their natural muscle strength. To do this correctly, I don't want you to smile at each other. The person is being tested, you'll just look off at the wall and try to be neutral. Think about the wall. And have your partner test you to get a feeling, just a feeling for what your muscle strength is under normal conditions. Can we do that? Let's do that first. So this is like a basis. Gives you an understanding of what the person's natural strength is. Just use two fingers to press down. Put your right hand on his left shoulder. Okay, that's a good way to do it, yeah. Yes. You just put your arm out. All right, now you look at the wall. All right, now you resist when I press down. Good. All right, now I got a good feeling for your muscle strength. You can stay right here with me. Okay, everybody tested each other. All right, now the next thing we're going to do is we'll have the number one test. Everybody decided who's one and two, right? Okay? Decide who's one and who's two. Decide, choose ones and twos. Okay? All right, now number two is going to be the subject and number one will be the tester for this next experiment. Now I want you to test this person. Number ones, I want you to test number two again. Only number twos, I want you to think of something negative. I want you to think of something unpleasant in your life. An unpleasant expectation. Think of yourself as being run over by a truck. Whatever. Think of something you'd like to change in your life. Think of somebody you don't like. In other words, I want you to pick up something negative and hold it in mind while the other person tests you. So first, same test. I want you to hold something unpleasant in your mind, something you wish hadn't happened, something you wish won't happen, some regret. Some negativity. Let your partner know when you got it in mind. And then test your partner with that thought in mind. Okay, got it? Got it? Look at all that. A room full of weaklings. What is this here? What's the matter with these number twos today? It's important not to don't look at your partner and smile at them. I want the number two is just to hold something negative in mind and have your number one test you to see what the effect is on your strength. You got it? Everybody tested it? Okay, number twos. Hey, number twos. And now I want number twos to think of someone they love. When you got that firmly in mind, tell your partner and the testers, I want you to test your number twos now. While they're picturing or thinking, feeling connected to somebody they love. Okay? Do it. That's rather remarkable, isn't it? All right, now let's switch around. We'll do it in reverse. Number two, you be the tester. Number one, you be the subject. Okay, number ones, pay attention. Number ones, they want you to hold something negative in your mind. Like you're just about to fail. All right, now that you've checked out the negative, everybody done it? All right, now, number ones, see if you can dream of somebody you love. And now retest them with somebody they love. Okay, number ones, have you got somebody that you love in mind? Number twos, go ahead and test them now. All right, the next thing we'll do, children, The next thing we'll do is face the blackboard, and number one's going to be the testers, number two can be the subject. I want number two just to look at this, and I want number one to test you while you're looking at it, okay? Just look at this, number twos. Okay, number ones, please test them while they're looking at it. Got it? Depends on how far you're on the course. All right, number two, look at this. Number ones, go ahead and test. Wow, phenomenal, isn't it? So that's the effect of smiling, you see? When we smile at people, they go strong. And when they go weak.
I had the opposite effect. When I saw that, I thought of a rainbow, and the other one I thought of a hole. Why don't you just think of what it is?
Just looking at it visually has the curious effect that when that curve is reversed, people generally go weak. And when the curve is like a smile, they generally go strong. It's true about 95% of the time. Now, this technique can be used, you see, for testing anything. Now, how many people believe this is bad for you? Good. Can I come up, please? Good. Okay, you just resist. Resist when I press down. Okay. I'm going to hold this in your hand. Hold it right against yourself like this. All right, now you test me. First without it. Okay. Now with it.
Not supposed to do that.
Right. All right, so we have two different belief systems. The mind is so powerful, it will overpower everything, you see. The belief that this will make you weak will make you weak. The belief that you're immune to anything except what you hold in mind will make this ineffectual. It has no effect on somebody who's transcended that thought. Okay, thanks. Using kinesiology, then, you can demonstrate the truth of that lesson that says we're subject only to what we hold in mind. This means that we are in danger nowhere in the universe, except everywhere, unless we've taken the Course in Miracles. You haven't taken the course, you're in danger everywhere, right? Once you've taken the course, this very profound lesson, it's one of the major lessons to me in the course, is that you're subject only to what you hold in consciousness. Therefore, by looking at your life, you can tell what you're holding in consciousness. You look at your life, it's quite obvious what you're holding in consciousness, because what's manifesting in your life is what you've been believing. If you want something different to manifest in your life, all we have to do is change our belief system then. And of course, the course is a magnificent course in doing just that, in changing our thought systems. As we were saying this morning at breakfast, until you get rid of your mind, the best thing you can do is correct it. Eventually, you see that the mind is also a belief system and you let it go. But until you do, I love this book. Your mind can drive you crazy. So literally, that's what it is then. It's our mind that drives us crazy. It's not anything in our environment. It's not what anybody else does or thinks or says. It's what we ourselves are holding in mind. That means that we can correct it. That means that we can heal any condition of the human body. It's my belief and my clinical experience that you can heal anything, any illness, any impairment of the human body by strictly following the course's principles and applying them in a consistent manner. Some things alleviate instantly, other things take a little time, I suppose, depending on so many different factors. I myself had just about every ailment in the textbook, When I went through medical school, I imagined I had all these ailments. Every illness that we studied, I imagined I had it. I had medical studentitis. We got everything we were holding in mind. But then, after coming into the Course in Miracles, all the ailments that I had, I mean, as I say, in medical school, and I imagined I had them, by the time I was 50, I actually had them. That's the only difference. By 50, all the things I thought I had in medical school, I actually had. I had so many ailments by the time I got to the Course in Miracles that I can't remember them all. And I used to carry a 3x5 card covered on both sides with all the ailments that I had all at the same time. Now, what I can remember of them, I'll list, starting from top to bottom, starting from dandruff to athlete's feet, hitting everything in between. I had an active duodenal ulcer. I had esophagitis and bronchitis. I had diverticulitis. I had gout, elevated cholesterol. I had severe hypoglycemia. I had migraine headaches. I had a whole variety of bizarre diseases, not too familiar to the public, leading to gangrene of the fingertips, Raynaud's disease, vibration disease, impaired circulation. I had a middle-aged syndrome. At age 50, I was cold, and male menopause or something, you know. I was cold all the time. Libido disappeared, forget it. My hair was falling out. I wore bifocals, and we were going to trifocals at the time I came into the course. We were advancing from bifocals to trifocals. I had all kinds of allergies. Poison ivy, for instance, I had it every year. In fact, I had poison ivy so bad I've been in the hospital twice with it. Severe migraine headaches, which really impaired my functioning. In the world, I was very successful. As the world saw me, really I'd achieved the ultimate. I had probably the largest, or one of the largest practices in the United States. I had 50 employees at a huge clinic. I had a staggering hospital practice. I had a magnificent estate on Long Island. I had an apartment on Fifth Avenue. I had a fleet of cars, household help. I had the world the way everybody would like to have the world, because they imagined that would bring you happiness. I was happy, you might say, if I could eat something. You can imagine going into a restaurant with this variety of diseases. I often looked at the menu, and the only thing I could have was the lettuce and the carrots. I gave up going to friends' houses for dinner, because I would look at what they're having for dinner, and there was nothing on there I could eat. Italian food with tomato sauce, forget it. Pasta, forget it, with hypoglycemia. Dessert, forget it. Strawberries, no, they had little seeds in them. Diverticulitis, you see? Couldn't eat poppy seeds, couldn't eat starch, couldn't eat rolls, couldn't eat sugar, sweets, couldn't eat meats, couldn't eat, of course, because of the gout, liver, all those things were terrible. And with the elevated cholesterol, forget butter and cheese. And so as you can see, I eliminated one class of foodstuffs after another. And then with the allergies that were left, which canceled things like milk and all, I really left very little, and so I was quite thin at the time. There being very little on the planet I could eat. No caffeine, of course, and I didn't drink coffee for 15 years. And then I started the Course in Miracles. Also, I'd had a severe tragedy in my family life and was quite depressed on top of all this. Who wouldn't be with all those illnesses anyway? But the loss of a family member, of course, is another severe disruption in one's life, and the disruption of the family and a marriage of many years also. So all this was happening at the same time. External causes for depression, internal causes, enough unconscious guilt to kill a horse, and all that unconscious guilt manifesting through all these ailments. Well, I was at the Monroe Institute in Virginia, taking a course on astral projection, you know, going out of body at will, and it was a 10-day training course. And while I was down there, just before I left, somebody mentioned the Course in Miracles. All he said to me was, by the way, when you get back home, look up the Course in Miracles, which I'd never heard about. This is 1977. But I found out it was published by the Foundation for Inner Peace, and I wrote them and California. And eventually I got a set of books from Saul's publishing house in Long Island. And I began doing the workbook on my own. I knew nothing about metaphysics, consciousness. All this was all strange new territory. I was a left-brain scientist, a skeptic. Right-brain phenomena to me were airy, fairy, and bizarre, and unnatural. And, of course, unscientific. So I was a scientist and a skeptic and a clinician. Also, I was a pragmatist, and I am to this day. I only believe what I see, witness, or experience myself. And I've never been too impressed by book learning. So he was a skeptical pragmatist with all these ailments and life collapsing around him, and he came upon something called The Course in Miracles. Well, the effect of the course was spectacular. Within 90 days, the depression disappeared. And then as I got further into the course, all these ailments began to disappear. One by one, every single one of them has eliminated itself. The hypoglycemia disappeared. I had it really severe. I had a 5-hour glucose tolerance test. Within the third hour, it really dropped way down precipitously. So severely, I couldn't get off the couch, in fact, nor could I drive home the day I had the 5-hour glucose tolerance test. That's how bad I had hypoglycemia. And hypoglycemia I canceled as a belief system. I turned it over to God and asked for a miracle. And the hypoglycemia disappeared. I had cervical arthritis, impairment of the vertebrae in the neck, you know, and that triggered a lot of headaches. In between the migraines, I just had ordinary headaches. Due to cervical arthritis and a displaced fourth cervical vertebrae, which showed up on x-ray. The fourth cervical vertebrae, they're all supposed to be lined up neat in a curve, and this one's like, way out in front. And that was supposedly impinging on nerves and triggering reflex headaches. So I had cervical arthritis so bad that I went to the chiropractor 2 or 3 times a week. And regularly, I had my regular, you know, standing appointments at the chiropractor to keep my neck from twisting too badly, you know. And so that's the kind of life I live, staggering from day to day. Well, the cervical arthritis disappeared. An x-ray showed that the vertebrae have gone back into place. And I haven't seen a chiropractor in quite a time. So without any particular treatment except disco dancing, which I recommend for curing conditions of that kind, I found in disco dancing I could feel the vertebrae beginning to snap back into place. Also at age 50 I didn't dance, you see, that's something else that happened after I got into the Course in Miracles. That's right, another condition I forgot. Non-dancing was another condition I suffered from. I mean, I suffered from it because in our society it's necessary to dance once in a while, and I hated it, you know. I avoided weddings and all because all the women would grab you by the arm and say, come on, let's dance. Oh, God, I hate it. So that's another miracle I forgot about, dancing, yes. Well, I recommend disco dancing plus the Course in Miracles to cure cervical arthritis and spondylosis and all those things that afflict the spine, because the spine cured itself. And, of course, the gout disappeared. I remember the day the gout disappeared. All these illnesses were beginning to disappear. Sometimes I would just wake up in the morning knowing they were gone. I would just wake up knowing it. It had nothing to do with thinking, figuring, or reasoning. I just woke up and it was as though it had happened, and I just knew that it was now gone. But I had a cat. I was out in Sedona, and the cat was sort of a finicky eater, so I bought him some liver and kidneys, you know. And I cut it up raw, and he stuck his nose up at it. I said, some cat doesn't like liver and kidneys. So I thought, I know what, he wants them fried. So I fried his liver and kidneys with onions, and I put in lots of catnip. So I love liver and kidneys and things like that, you know, with English background. Steak and kidney pie to me is heaven. So here were these delicious smelling kidneys and liver and stuff frying away with onions. And I finally got the cat's dinner all ready, and he stuck his nose up at it and wouldn't eat the fried liver and kidneys either. So I was standing there looking at this whole frying pan full of this concoction, and all of a sudden, in an instant, I knew that gout was a figment of my imagination. In that instant, I canceled gout, and I ate half a frying pan of liver and kidneys. And the next day finished them. So, Wally, the cat didn't like him, but I did. And So that was the cure of the gout. Wally's kidney and liver was my gout cure. And then one morning I woke up and I remember I suddenly knew I was immune to poison ivy. In fact, I had a program I had to do that day. So I went outside, and where I lived on Long Island was full of poison ivy, and I dug up a pot full and put it in a pot and played with it. And then, in fact, I took a pot of poison ivy with me to the program. The interviewer almost fainted. He says, "Don't get that near me." But you see, even the name poison ivy, the minute I tell you poison ivy, you've got a program that this ivy is poison, right? And the name itself is a program. Naturally, if somebody tells you this is poison ivy and it causes an itchy rash, well, that's what you're going to do. You're going to get an itchy rash. So anyway, I suddenly was immune to poison ivy. Then one day I was out in Sedona and I went to visit some people. Before I start that story, I had migraines so severe that once in a while I used to have to be driven home. I'd go to the hospital, and I had a very large practice, see about 35 patients every morning. And they would use insect spray only on Friday afternoons after I'd left the hospital. I was so sensitive to insecticides that if they'd sprayed this room within a week, I'd get a migraine headache. And I could tell a migraine was coming on because there's a certain click sound in the brain. You get a whiff of that. Once you're sensitive to a thing, you can pick up one part in a million. If they'd sprayed this room within a week, I would instantly tell you that there's been insect spray. I still have that sensitivity. There is no insect spray in here, by the way. But one time at the hospital, they made a mistake, and they sprayed on a Wednesday morning. And when I walked into the hospital, I got one whiff. That's all it took, one whiff. I felt the click, and the migraine was so overpowering. My blood pressure dropped. My pulse went way down. I became very pale. And they actually had to drive me home in a limousine. I couldn't see the patient that day. That's how severe the migraine was. So one day I went to visit a friend in Sedona. I'd been doing the course for about 2 years at the time. In fact, I was teaching it in Sedona. And I went to visit this friend, and I sat on the porch. And I went up to the front door and knocked on the screen door. And Catherine came to the door, and as she opened the door, I smelled this terrific smell of this insecticide. In Sedona, a lot of houses are sprayed once a week. Anyway, the smell was overwhelming. And so I was frightened. I backed away from the door. And I said, "Oh, Catherine, I can't come in." I said, "I'm allergic to that stuff. We'll sit on the porch." So we sat on the porch. And as I was sitting on the porch, all of a sudden I got a message in my mind that told me I was immune to it. It had nothing to do with thinking or reason or figuring anything out. I just in one instant knew that I was immune to whatever that was. But I still was afraid to go in because a migraine is pretty severe. And just the fear of that pain, I was afraid to go in the house. Anyway, this voice in my mind seemed to be rather insistent about this, that I go in. And so despite the fear, the voice, I had faith in the voice. So I said, "Well, Catherine, I used to be allergic to this stuff. I guess we'll go inside." I used to be. In one instant, I was no longer allergic to it. So I said, "We can go inside." And I went inside, and I breathed this powerful fumes very deeply. And I breathed it with no anxiety, and I knew that I was immune. And there was no migraine headache, no click, nothing. Also, just as an aside, the other thing that happened was I got also from the same voice, it was important to experience this because now you know you're also immune to radioactivity. As though that was a necessary thing to know regarding the future. By having this experience, I was so profoundly convinced that you are only subject to what you hold in mind, that I also knew the same holds no matter what it is in the outer world. It doesn't make any difference whether it's sweet and low, whether it's caffeine, whether it's poison ivy, whether it's smoke, whether it's radioactivity. Same lesson. All the same. You're either subject to all of them or you're subject to none of them. There is no order of gradation, as you know, in miracles. It's all or none. You're either subject to all of it or you're subject to none of it. From what I've experienced, we're subject to none of it.